Welcome to Val F. Base Stuttgart Americana, an American-based English language Val F. Base Stuttgart fan podcast where our views are unofficial, uninformed, and usually unprepared. But we're pretty prepared today because we have a special guest with us who's going to kind of help us understand exactly the dumpster fire that we are in right now. But first off, my name is Travis. You can reach me at Hazelfish. You can reach us at Val F. Americana on the Twitter machine. This is actually episode 63 this time. Matt, all episode last week, we kept saying how it was 63, and we hadn't quite made it there. But hey, congrats, 63. What do you think?
Well, we were living in the future last week, and I feel like this week I might want to live in the past, like to before the Dortmund game happened.
Yeah, who knew episode 63 would be so bad? Although, if you've listened to this podcast at all, you probably didn't know that. Matt, this is your 28th episode, and like we usually do, I'm going to throw some famous 28s at you, okay? You ready?
Bring them on.
All right, not too famous. I mean, both Kadira brothers played for the club, but you know, let's go more recent history. We've got Nicholas Nardi, who currently plays, is a defensive midfielder for the club, and our old friend Holger Badstuber. Which of those two, or four, if you include the Kadira brothers, is near and dear to your heart?
Let's include them all just for fun, and I'm still going to go with Holger Badstuber, not because of anything Holger did for us, but because of the crazy lady on social media who calls herself Mrs. Badstuber and has been stalking him relentlessly. She was a delightful follow when he was around, and I kind of miss her, to be honest.
She got super defensive when things started to go south for Holger, too.
And it was wonderful.
I remember that. I have a crazy theory. I have a theory that had Holger stayed healthy that season that we were relegated the second time around, we wouldn't have been relegated. How crazy is that theory? Do you think there's any sanity to that theory, Matt, or is that all crazy?
I think it might have taken a little more than a fully healthy Holger Badstuber to keep us up that time, but I still love the theory.
Yeah, he's the only thing that separated us from first division and second division play. Holger retired recently, so wherever you're at, buddy, we miss you. Well, I miss you. I don't know if Matt misses you. But this season, like the end of Holger's career with Stuttgart, has kind of gotten a little bit of a disaster. And so we thought, who better to bring in to kind of help us understand the disaster we're on than a long-time suffering Cincinnati Bengals fan of the NFL. I'm sure, Ted, you're laughing since I'm a long-suffering Cleveland Browns fan of the NFL. Ted, welcome to the program. How are you doing?
It's great to be here. Sometimes I wish I wasn't a Stuttgart fan, but it's great to be here. And don't forget, my additional qualification is I'm also a Reds fan. You have me beat on baseball. You guys actually make the playoffs and perform admirably. So I feel like uniquely qualified to assess the qualities or lack thereof of very bad soccer teams in
general. The joke's on you because I'm actually not a Cleveland Guardians fan. I used to be a Pittsburgh Pirates fan for some unknown reason. And I don't even know if they play professional.
I don't think that makes it better. You're right, man.
The toilet bowl of sports is kind of where I'm at right now. I'm going to this is your second episode. The last time we had you on was way back in December, a year ago, when we did our kind of season review preview of the first half of the season. So I'm going to throw some twos at you, okay? So here's some current number two. So we got Valdemar Anton, who currently plays for the club, 70-plus matches. Old friend Emiliano Insua, who played about 130 matches for the club at left back. I never actually saw the next player, Gotuko Sakai, who played almost 70-some matches for the club, another left back. Guido Buchwald, who is a famous Stuttgart icon, and Gunter Schaefer, who is currently the team manager. Ted, any of those guys stick out to you?
Well, I have to admit, I mean, Guido Buchwald and Gunter Schaefer were both before my time. But reading the Gunter Schaefer bio, I want to claim him. That guy has championship pedigree. And to see that he has been on our coaching staff the whole time makes me think we may have inadvertently stumbled upon our, you know, a solution to our managerial issues.
Interesting.
What is a team manager? Is he like the kit guy or the boot guy or something like that? Or like, does he have qualifications beyond laundry duties?
Considering how the coaching search is going right now, Matt, I think Gunter Schaefer is more than qualified to be. Do you know what a team manager is, Matt?
I'm pretty sure it equates to the kit man in England. So he does the shirts and the boots and the laundry, equipment manager, we would call it in like football, American football. Still, he's won a championship with Stuttgart, which is more than we can say for any other of the managerial candidates. I'm on the Gunter bandwagon. Go, Gunter, go. Let's do it.
I say sign him up.
I think he's on the bench, so he's actually part of the game day atmosphere. So he's not behind the scenes. He's actually on the scenes. For anybody who doesn't know, because it's a pretty dark period for us right now, let's revel in the past of this club. All right, Gunter Schäfer, currently the team manager. He's been associated with the club in a coaching or personnel perspective since 2000. He was a center back or right back for the club, played 16 seasons, 399 matches, two-time Bundesliga champion, one-time Super Cup champion. His most famous play, if you guys haven't seen it on YouTube, it was the final match. I'm going to break this down. All right, I know this introduction is going forever, but we need something good. So going into the final match day of the 1991-92 season, it was a tie between Dortmund, between Stuttgart, and between Frankfurt. And Frankfurt had the easiest match. They were playing a relegated already team, but they ended up losing. And then we had a goal difference on Dortmund, but we're down 1-0 early. Then it's 1-1 at halftime. I like how I'm saying we, like we were there at the time. And then Gunter has this amazing bicycle kick save on the goal line to keep a late Leverkusen goal out. In the 88th minute, Buchwald scores the game-winning goal. Victory for Stuttgart at home, 1992, table meister. Can you guys imagine, Ted, I'm going to start with you. Could you imagine what it would be like to, celebrate a win?
I was going to say, I mean, as you talk it out, it sounds a lot like the last game of last season against Cologne. But to win the title, wow, amazing. That's, I mean, think about how excited we all got just to not be relegated.
No, actually, it was the same kits for both of those matches. I forgot about that. Good point. Matt, could you imagine winning a title or winning a game?
I'm having a hard time imagining winning back-to-back games at this point. So, as Ted mentioned, we all lost our minds when Legendo scored that goal and we didn't get relegated. And Travis, I think that clip might still be on replay in your house right now. So if we won, I don't know what we'd do.
I don't. There's a phrase up in Cleveland that if the Browns or the Guardians ever won, some place would freeze over. So I'm guessing it's the same thing for Stuttgart to a certain degree. But you know what? Enough, you know, of the past. I'm sure there's some lighter days ahead, right, guys?
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but...
Well, with that rousing positivity, all right, we're going to, in part one, break down the two matches of the week. In part two, we'll do some headlines and some questions. In part three, we'll do predictions for the big match versus Augsburg. What do you guys think? You ready to go?
Yeah.
Let's go.
Here we go. Right, here we are, part one. So we got two matches to break down. So the first match was that just 6-0 drubbing of DSC Bielefeld. They were in 18th place at the time. We missed our entire defense from Flo Mueller to Dino to Zagadou to Anton. Ironically, that may not have been that bad of a thing. Breblo, Stenzel, Karazor, Ito were in. Guys, I want to read you a couple of the reviews of the match because I just love the way German reporting goes. Kicker reported, quote, Valpi earned a at Hyde an intoxicated victory. And then Kicker later said after halftime, quote, only the intoxicated Stuttgart played. Matt, let me start with you. Should Stuttgart just play intoxicated for the rest of the season? Because based on Kicker's analysis, that's what got us the victory.
I feel like we have to try it, right? Is Kronbacher still a sponsor of the team? We can fill up the water bottles. We had speculation earlier that they were drinking decaf coffee. Scrap the coffee altogether. Put a keg in the locker room. Let's start winning some matches.
Ted, it's got to be, you know, something. Matt and I talked the previous podcast about how we were both pretty optimistic going into this match. I don't know what your thoughts were going into the match, but I mean, how could you not feel amazing after those 90 minutes?
Straight into my veins. That one was so needed. And on the heels of the Volcom match was, you know, I finally felt like little momentum here. I know it's two separate competitions, but it was like two wins on the trot. Definitely took away a little bit of the sourness and sadness of Pellegrino's departure. And I finally felt like, hey, man, is Vimmer the right guy? Have we figured things out? And then, yeah, we just happened to have played Bauckham and Bielefeld.
I know. Matt, is that basically at the end of the day, the analysis? We played the 18th place team in the Bundesliga and the 18th place team in the Zweite Bundesliga. Is it as simple as that?
I think it has to be. Doing much, looking much deeper into any of this with the odd lineups we had and our caretaker, manager, we can't learn a whole lot from these matches other than we are capable of scoring goals if the other team is capable of not defending.
I don't know if anything stood out to you guys. Like in the Bielefeld match, I thought the midfield looked amazing. Enzo Malone looked amazing. Luca Pfeiffer got off the schneid. He got, you know, his two goals. Sosa was doing his old thing. To see Salas, you know, smiling and sprinting up and down the field again. I know that was not a very good competition, but you've got to beat the clubs that are in front of you. And they did convincingly. I didn't think that we were going to go and take that into a win the next week, Ted, but I thought that would be some positive momentum going forward. Was there anything that stood out to you in that match, or is it just everything's overshadowed by what happened on Saturday at Dortmund?
The thing I remember back on is the last couple of seasons, I feel like Bielefeld was a bit of a thorn in our sides. Like they were a team that we were always like looking down on or looking straight in the eyes and should have consistently, you know, we were always putting out a better 11 than them, and they would either tie us or somehow find a way to beat us, it felt like. So this one kind of felt like getting a monkey off the back and felt like we were accomplishing something we had in the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, Matt?
Yeah, I feel like Bielefeld's been that team that we always feel like we should beat, and then we don't, and it's infuriating. So to really thump them, just kind of some soul cleansing there.
Very cathartic.
Yeah, well, speaking of cathartic and cleansing, let's move on to the Saturday match then. Matt, I'm going to start with you here. When we did our predictions, you predicted Dortmund to cover the spread. And the spread in this one was Dortmund minus a goal. So I thought that it would be a Dortmund win, but I thought we'd at least keep it close because historically these two teams have played pretty close. We were riding some good feelings. History wasn't on our side. We only had two wins in the last, I think, 21, 22 matches. Let me put it this way. Florian Müller was the best rated player for Stuttgart after that match. And Florian Müller had to pick the ball out of the net 5 times. Matt, did you just have a feeling going into this one?
I felt like there was going to be a letdown, and I felt like the different talk we saw online swirling around the managerial stuff and the fact that it was still so unsettled, and people were starting to say that Vimmer was the answer. I just didn't feel great about any of that. And Dortmund's been kind of not struggling this season, but not playing as well as they should have been. And it just felt like we were ripe to get picked off by a Dortmund team finding their legs.
Yeah, Ted, how were you feeling going into that one?
I did not think we were going to win, but I thought we were going to keep it close. I was thinking this would be like a 2-3 or a 3-4, something like that, where we'd showed a propensity to put goals in the back of the net the previous couple of games. So I was hoping we could keep that up. And to Matt's point, I don't think Dortmund has looked fantastic this year. Like they were outside the top 5 and didn't look like they were planning on getting back inside anytime soon.
It's funny you guys say that because I wasn't even mad about this match because everything turned so quickly that you couldn't even really be that upset. It was just one of those ones where, okay, after 13 minutes, the match was effectively over. And you're like, well, I guess it's time to look towards Augsburg. The thing that blew me away was two things. Is team played such lousy defense. After the match, Florian Müller said that we played horrific on defense. Sven Mislintat said that the defense was so bad, and we'll get into this later, that Sven immediately extended Vimmer to the break. And I've got a theory on that later, but the offense didn't look that bad. It was the same old, where they missed chances, they had opportunities, they couldn't get stuff, and there was a great chance immediately after halftime that Gerasi wasn't able to get a head on Sosa Cross. Thiago got ripped on quite a bit for his play, but I thought he was putting pressure in there. I almost tweeted something out around the 40th minute that even though we're down 2-0, Dortmund's defense is so wobbly, Ted, that I can see us getting into this. And I had to delete the tweet because as soon as I was about to send it, Dortmund hit what turned out to be probably the end or, you know, of the game, and it was 3-0. So what struck you more? Was it how bad the defense was in those opening goals, or was it how the offense is putting up chances but still not converting? Is there any one of those that stuck out to you?
Yeah, the defense, like, just completely, guys got totally ghosted on those first couple of goals. Those were the two that I had the opportunity to see. I think, was it Bellingham on the first one?
I like the way you said that, though. You had the opportunity.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
You're welcome.
Misfortune, perhaps. I left my thesaurus off to the side, but I'll go with misfortune on that one. Yeah, I was up in Columbus for the Ohio State-Iowa game, hoping that two black and yellow teams were going to get utterly thrashed that day, and that Dortmund would be one of them. But alas, so, yeah, I had to leave 30 minutes into the game and try to get my Stuttgart hat on the big noon kickoff on Fox, but it didn't. Unless you guys saw me, I don't think that it worked out. but, yeah, what I did see, completely ghosted on defense, but I was struck. The offense was still creating chances. And, like, what surprised me is Dortmund spent so much money this offseason on signing Süle, on signing Schlotterbeck, that, like, they should be far better than they have been on defense. And by all rights, we should have gotten a couple of goals in this one, I thought.
They looked bad on defense, and which is silly because we scored exactly zero goals in here. The thing that was crazy, I think we can be honest enough with our listeners to say that you win the co-host of the day prize, because you didn't put yourself through the actual live watch of this match. I don't know if you saw any of the highlights, but the first two goals, there was absolutely no pressure on the Dortmund player. There was nobody near him. And then on the second goal, that one was more damning to me because it was just a free kick into space, and none of the Stuttgart defenders, from Dan Axel to Dino, tracked back, and Sulo just walked in there. The amount of times that the announcer said they aren't even trying for these goals was laughable as the match was going on. And that was the thing that struck me so much, is that I agree with Ted. It looked like the offense had some chances and some opportunities, but the defense was completely out of sorts.
One of the things I like to look for, I did watch some of the highlights. I did not watch this entire game because I'm not that much of a sadist. But the thing that struck me, I like to watch for the play leading up to the goal, right? Where are the defenders at? Where are they moving? Where should they be? Often where they are and where they should be for our team has not been the same thing lately. But what I could tell even just from the highlights is that these guys were lost. They're not where they need to be. The defense was atrocious. And as much as I want to dump on Florian Müller all the time, I don't feel like we can blame them much for the goals that were scored. And then on offense, we talked about the last time about how our guys just had a little more time and space, and that they were able to put balls in. And that's, I don't feel like Dortmund's defense was good by any means, but they put a little bit of pressure on our attackers and got in their heads a little bit, and were at least physically there. And that seemed to be enough to shake our guys, so they weren't able to execute like they did previously.
Ted, any comments on that? Did you see some of that in the bit that you watched?
Yeah, and it reminded me a little bit of that that late winner that Wolfsburg got against us, where it was like the defense was just so disorganized. Like, you look at that still shot even of when they got that goal, and it's like they had five players in the box to our three, I think, or something like that. And it just, this felt like a little bit of that same thing over again.
You wait for the little Xbox controller has been disconnected symbol to come up to explain why none of our players are moving where they should be.
I'm just going to jump right to, I mean, jump right to. So the OFC and our OFC, this was a low turnout vote, as you would expect. Luca Pfeiffer was the man of the match from the OFC. Only got 3 votes. Claudia Reyna got 2 votes for Dortmund. Bellingham got 1 vote. The 7,000.
Did Pfeiffer have the lowest amount of game time? Is that why?
Well, somebody said we should vote for somebody on the bench who didn't play because then it wasn't their fault. Koulibaly got 1 vote for not playing. Florian was the best rated player by kicker. So just yikes on that. And that's not against Florian. That's just how bad the defense was. Here's my theory. The defense played so poorly in particular. And you, Matt, you've said this before that defense is effort, attitude, more so than ability at some levels. That's why you can see some of these quote unquote lesser talented teams have a lot of success just because they have so much effort and desire and focus. And I really believe that Sven went into the locker room after this match and immediately said, Wimmer's the coach until the World Cup, guys. Get your act together. Because that performance, you guys are acting like there's a substitute teacher here right now. So, Matt, I'll start with you, then Ted, go with you. My theory, listen, I told you earlier, I thought Holger Badstuber could have single-handedly won us the title. So is this one as crazy or does this one have some merit?
No, I can see it. And Sven's the guy I feel like is frequently playing three-dimensional chess when we're looking for checkers. And, you know, we see him sign these guys out of nowhere that make a lot of sense. And he's done a lot of good business for the team. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if he went in there and said, this is what it is, and straighten up. I'm a little bit glad to hear that they're not rushing to sign a coach, as we talked about last time. I've been really nervous that they're going to make a signing just to make it. So I feel like this is good all around. And if Sven is pulling those levers, good on him, because somebody's got to do something to get these Yahoos straightened out.
It just seems like there is some distraction for the first time in really 2.5 years, even though we haven't had some great results. So, Ted, what do you think? Did Sven make that decision that Wimmer's going to be the coach for the next 4 matches to kind of nip some of this in the bud to send a message, or was it just a desperation move?
Yeah, I think he's got to put some of the onus back on the players, in my opinion. I mean, at the end of the day, these guys are professional footballers. This is what they get paid to do. They bear equal responsibility for this situation as the coach does. So it should not take one individual pulling the strings to turn this around. I like it from Sven if that's the tactic he's after.
What blows me away is that we've, as Stuttgart supporters, suffered through some pretty rough losses over the course of our fandom. And we've suffered through some pretty big losses, you know, point-wise too. I can't remember a loss that was as – I shouldn't say that. I remember there's a couple when Corku was coach or when Marcus Weinzierl was coach, when they were on their way out, where you could tell that the players just weren't listening to whatever that guy was selling. But you saw it 1 through 11. What was so bizarre about this match, Ted, is that I didn't see that on the offensive players. Like, I think you could make an argument that Silas is like, I don't want to play wing back anymore. I don't want to track back on defense anymore. It seemed like he wasn't all out, but it seemed like the offensive guys were at least still putting in that full effort, but it looked like the defensive guys weren't. And it was the first time I've seen that in since Pellegrino's been coach.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. I had a gut feeling about this. And so before we jumped on, I took a look back at our results over the course of the season. And I saw the Frankfurt match was the only game when Pellegrino was in charge that we lost by more than a goal. Every other match, we either lost by 1 or tied. So this one felt like a total aberration comparatively. And we've been talking all season about how these guys don't quit on the manager or on each other, and they always seem to be fighting and scrapping until the end. So it was weird to see a match where it was like, you know, as soon as the first half whistle went, it felt like it was done.
Yeah. Matt, any comments on that? Or do you want to take a look at the table and see how good that's going to make you feel?
That will not make me feel any better. I am legitimately concerned that we pulled the plug on Matarazzo too soon, that we've gone from a you know, an underperforming team that believes in its cause, that has an identity and a purpose and a plan, although, you know, we're not executing it, but we had a plan, to a team that has no plan, has no identity, and has no purpose. And that's, as you mentioned, defense is a lot of organization and discipline and work rate. And we didn't have any of that against Dortmund. And at least two of those things can be attributed to coaching.
Oy vey. Well, that, Ted, is what we call a segue in the podcasting business. You know, I read a book once on, it had nothing to do with podcasting, but I read a book once. It said that. So,
and you call yourselves underinformed, man.
I did win my world today, so I got that going. I got that going for me after I looked up the hint. Anyway, we're gonna move on to part two, headlines and questions, and let's get into Matt's ideas here about who is has Stuttgart lost its purpose a little bit. All right, we'll be back in a minute.
Rooting for a team where you very seldom have a chance to win a Meisterschale, it's pretty awesome to have this secondary competition. Bring them on. Like, I'm all about that sort of format. And I like how England has multiple of them. If we had a secondary DFB Pokal, I'm in for that too. As many as they want to give us.
Man, I think it's now defunct. But actually, they're bringing it back. So now there's that third tier competition, which is the Europa Conference League, which is beneath the Europa League and the Champions League. There was a version of this in the 90s. I forget what it is called or was called, but the all-time winning club in the third tier competition was our very own VfB Stuttgart.
How about that? I think we have to bring it back just so we can dominate something.
So Paderborn is in second place, though. So that doesn't fit our vibe of playing 18.
We're only supposed to play teams in the bottom of their competition in these things. I don't like where this is going.
Yeah, hopefully by January, Paderborn will be back down to 18th. And I'll like our chances with that. All right, guys, let's jump into the big headlines, which is obviously the coaching situation that's going on. Just to put it in perspective, Kicker and SWR, two news organizations out in Germany, put it on a poll as to who should Stuttgart hire as their coach. 31,000 people voted on the Kicker poll. 38% said stay with Wimmer, whereas the SWR poll said that 39% of us should go with Jess, who is out of a job from the Danish league. Let me give you some quotes. I'll start, Ted, with you. Sven said, listen, the two times that Wimmer had to do it under maximum pressure, he did very well. And so that's why he's going to be named the head guy until at least, quote, the winter break. Then he's actually one of the candidates if he continues to perform well, which sounded completely different than what was said, you know, prior to this situation. And then the SWR wrote, you know, the decision viewed soberly, which again, I like the fact that nobody can write about Stuttgart without bringing up alcohol in some form or fashion, said removed from all the emotion is understandable because Wimmer's team did work two out of the three times, but Jess may be swooped up, and this other guy, Schrader, who seems to be off the radar a bit, who is currently with Ajax, as Matt, you know, taught me how to pronounce last week, seems to be denying the job. So, Matt, or Ted, let me start with you. Wimmer's the guy for the next four matches. Flabby Viking asked a question, you know, how do you feel about this? Are you concerned about this? Ted, I'll start with you, and then Matt will go to you.
Well, my beverage of choice during this podcast is a glass of Chianti in honor of Pellegrino. my feeling with the Sven quote, that those were maximum pressure games. My feeling was, I think we could have put a small child in charge of the team, before those matches potentially and won them. So I did understand giving Wimmer an easy ramp, to start off with. But it kind of felt like it gave us all false hope, and then the wheels came off directly afterwards. Would it have been better to have Pellegrino still in charge, get a little bit of a good juju going with the team and carry on with his organizational manner? I like to think the latter, personally. That's where I come from.
Yeah, I concur with Ted here. Calling two games against teams in 18th place of their respective leagues, maximum pressure, a little rich for my blood. It would have been way better off used to have Pellegrino build some momentum. And like, small child, dude, we could have put an empty costume of Fritzl in charge in those two games and we would have been all right. So it just, yeah, not great. I'm not loving these comments, sober or not.
Preferably not. I was ready to build a statue of Mimmer, you know, mockingly so, outside the arena after the two wins there. I want to touch back on, Matt, something you said in part one about how your vision that with Pellegrino being gone, they went from underperforming to almost like goalless in more ways than one. Do you have anything to add to that? Because I thought that was actually a rare, brilliant point on your part.
Well, you know, a broken clock is right twice a day. We lack direction and conviction. And I think some of that is that there is a substitute teacher running the classroom. I think it was still, since they pulled the plug, caveat, I disagree with that choice. Since they did it, giving Vimmer the reins for the time being was the right move. He's been a loyal troop, give him some opportunity. But calling what he did high performance under maximum pressure is an insult to him and to our intelligence. And the fact, like, if he had done what he did against in the first two games, in the Pokal match and in the like Bochum game, and then lost to Dortmund by one or by two, yeah, okay, let's start talking, you know, maybe we're getting Vimmer t-shirts coming. But as it is, I wouldn't do that. Put him in consideration, sure. Let that myth get out there, pump up his tires a little bit. No problem with that. If Sven seriously has him up near the top of the list, I feel like that's a very empty list and we are all in a lot of trouble.
Well, let's go with this. If Sven's theory is that, listen, this guy performed really well in the match that we had to win. You had to win that Bochum match, right? So and he did, and convincingly so. So if we look at the table right now, Schalke has 6 points. They're in last place. Bochum has seven. They're a point behind us in 17th. Then it's us with eight. Leverkusen, shockingly, is ahead of us with 9 points. And then in 14th is Wolfsburg with 11. Hertha's in our first place, which is 13. They've got 11 points as well. Augsburg, who we're playing this weekend, with 14. Bremen with 15. Cologne with 16. And Gladbach with 16. So those are your bottom nine. We've got Augsburg, Ted. Then we've got Gladbach. Then we've got Hertha. Then we've got Leverkusen. As it turns out, we have four of the bottom nine clubs on our schedule for the next, you know, before the World Cup break. I'm just really interested to see, can Vimmer punch the right buttons to get this team to continue to perform, or is this going to be the beginning of the free fall? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm looking at the table right now to see. They also have pretty bad defenses. I guess that shouldn't be surprising considering where they sit in the table. But that does give me a little bit of hope that maybe we can turn on the magic that we had against Bielefeld and Bochum and bag some goals against these guys. Augsburg, I feel like they've been a tough out for us the last few seasons. Mönchengladbach, I don't know why they're so middling this season. Like Thuram has had a good season. They've got some good able bodies, but those other guys, yeah, I would like to think we could knock out Hertha, and the others. Yeah,
it's just going back to Matt's point though. It just seems like those clubs seem to be playing with a little bit more. Maybe that's not fair. Bayer's probably the biggest disappointment of the season, you know, thus far. But it just seems like those clubs seem to be playing with a little bit more. I watch Hertha; they play hard and they lose, but they play hard. Schalke is probably the least talented club in the Bundesliga, and they play hard too. So I don't want to say our guys don't play hard, but boy, oh boy, coming off that Dortmund match, it didn't look like they were playing hard.
I think it's a recency bias. I think every match other than that Dortmund game, we were singing a different tune. So I hope that that's just an aberration with what happened in Dortmund.
Well, let's go back to Flabby's question then, Matt. On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being, oh God, bring back, you know, Zorniger, 10 being, hey, it's all good, How are you feeling with four matches to go before the break with Vimmer as the head guy?
I'm fine. It's a four. It's like he's not going to set the world on fire. And I don't think he's the guy that's going to take us to Bundesliga glory. But he's also not, you know, me on the sideline, which would be cause to burn the stadium down. So it'll be fine. If we can get points against Leverkusen and Berlin, I'd call that successful. If we don't get the doors blown off us against Gladbach, that'd be a good sign too. Maybe the Dortmund thing was just he hit the wrong team at the wrong time and we ran into a buzzsaw. If that's the case, then I'll eat my words from previously on the Dortmund match and happily. But I'm not convinced of them yet. But you guys are right. We've got the right stretch here to see what Vimmer is made of against real competition and real games that we should win against like teams.
If Matt, if you're a four, I'm going to say I'm somewhere around a six. I think Vimmer can get the guys in the right direction. What I would like to see is for him to make a very bold substitution lineup change, because I think there's some of those guys, in particular on the defense, who are just, they need a message. And maybe that was a message that he was sending to Ito when he surprisingly sat him, and a lot of us thought he was playing pretty well. I think Dan Axel still needs some time to adjust. He's looked pretty rough. I'm a big Valdemar Anton fan. He's had a couple rough matches. I don't want to say it is totally unfair to say that the Carazor, Stenzel, Ito back line that dominated Bielefeld is the line we should go with the rest of the season. But Ted, when Stenzel and Carazor were in the lineup for large portions of the season last season, the team was at least stable. And maybe the recency bias is there for me, but they were anything but stable, you know, without those guys in.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like I'm probably a five maybe on that scale. The room is not on fire. I'm not running for the exit right now, but I think we've got to look, I think, to get at least 5 points out of those four matches. I think if we get a win and two draws, I'm happy. However that shakes out, I think Mönchengladbach would be tough to beat, but the other three, I think we've got a chance against. And it's the first half of the season, so we're not in the crucible of things yet either.
Yeah, I think we're super lucky that Bochum, Schalke, and a couple of those other clubs are down there, because 8 points after this many matches, yikes. So let's get to the big elephant in the room now. So I really like this play on words. So the Süddeutsche Zeitung, the southern newspaper in Germany, wrote that VfB, instead of being the Association for Active Games, so the Verein für Bewegungsspiele, you like that?
Good job, Austin.
is instead the Verein für Bewegungslosheit. Oh man, that was bad. Anyway, motionless is what it means. How the club is just standing still and not making any movement, and they're blaming Verrill for this, because so their theory is, no one wants to coach here because nobody knows what Sven's status is. And because nobody knows what Sven's status is, this is not a long-term gig. This is a super short-term gig. So your list of candidates is super low. And so they go back to blaming Verrill for not negotiating with Sven over the course of the summer. So Matt, the negotiations for Sven have been pushed back to after the World Cup break. The hiring of the new manager has been pushed back till after the once we get the World Cup break, nothing's happening. And Matt, the team is just standing still, and this is a dangerous time to stand still.
Well, in fairness to the newspaper, our offense has been standing still all season. So, I mean, they could have applied that nickname much earlier. I applaud their play on words. I'm a big fan of a pun, but they make a good point. It's hard to sign up to work for a boss who's got no future potentially, and who's, you know, people pulling his strings are sitting there with an axe waiting for him to make one wrong move for an excuse to cut him. And ever since Verla showed up on the scene, at least to us, we've had chaos again at the club. We've talked a lot over the past couple of years, both on this podcast and just on chat and text that, you know, one of the things that's nice since we had Matarazzo is we've got some stability, and how other professional sports organizations, when they get that stability, even if they're not winning right away, eventually that starts to come. And we're going to have a hard time attracting anybody but a Hannes Wolf who's trying to prove themselves in the Bundesliga. And I loved Hannes Wolf, but dude flamed out in a hurry.
It's tough because it seems, I like what Matt said, it's probably much more complicated than Barrel versus Sven. You know, that's very simplistic. And really, that's probably the way we like to look at things. But is it that simple? And does Barrel... Here's where I want to go with this is I'd like to make this a little bit more complex is that I don't know any of the inner workings of anything. So I have no clue what's going on, but it is a lack of stability. I don't think anybody can deny that. And Verrill even apologized for that when Gettner, Kadera and Lahm were brought on board without Sven's, you know, notice about that. I think pushing this back has just created so much instability. And that's where I think Verrill has made, I would think, a bit of a mistake or at least a miscalculation that had he decided to get rid of Sven right away, there would have been an uproar. I get it. There would have been. We all love Sven. I think you can critically look at what Sven has done over the last 2 years and be like, yeah, you know what? There's some good. There's some bad. You know, we agree to disagree. Let's walk away. I think, you know, if you remove yourself soberly from it, you can do that. But I don't know how much Chianti you've had. So who do you think is at fault here? Do you think, is it Verrill? Is it Sven? Is it more than that? What are your thoughts?
I'm ride or die with Sven. So I blame Verla for this. And it kind of, I've gotten the impression it just seems to be Verla versus anyone else since kind of he's come in. It's been him, you know, riding other guys out of town to an extent and then bringing in this trio of former players unannounced as well. I think Sven, yes, we can split hairs over the quality of his work, but I think he's a really good fit for a club like ours and the budget that we have. I think he's done an awesome job finding the Itos of the world for us guys. I think it's going to take him being aligned with a manager it is definitely a two horses that have to be tied to the cart together, I think, for this to be successful. So it does make sense to me that Verla has said both of these are going to extend or terminate at the same time. Yeah, I think if we can bring in a manager, tie him in with Sven's philosophy, Sven can get him the right players within our budget.
Yeah, it's funny because I'm criticizing Verrill for not doing something that had he done it and gotten rid of Sven, I would have been very upset about. So the guy can't win. So it shows, you know, what we know here. It's just, it does seem to Matt's point that, and your point that ever since the change happened, Hitzlsperger left, and we thought he was kind of the cause of a lot of the chaos. And it turns out he was maybe the most stable person in the room. At least I was able to kind of keep things going. And now here's where it was. I really liked having Ted on here. It's like, Ted, you've been a Cincinnati Bengals fan for a long time. And I've been a Cleveland Browns fan for a long time. And Matt, you've been a Detroit Tigers fan for a long time. At least when it comes to Browns and the Bengals, those two football teams have been horrific for 3 decades, at least in the case of the Browns. Like legit three, their best couple seasons were when they were no longer in the league in the mid 90s. I think they've been awful. The Bengals have one good year, like every 15 years, they just show up, they go to the Super Bowl. They sadly lose in the last 30 seconds every single time, but if from ownership on down to management, to coaching, what really is worrying to me is that I've seen the dumpster fire that is the Cleveland Browns for 30 years. And I can't look away from the train wreck that they are. It's kind of entertaining at this point. Because the Browns are never going to get relegated. As much as I would like them to get relegated, they never will. I'm seeing a lot of comparisons between my beloved Stuttgart and the NFL team that I support, the Browns, from questionable ownership, management, and coaching now. Do you see any parallels between your Bengals and this club?
Well, it makes me wonder, is someone inside the Stuttgart organization, do they think there's a draft pick, a lottery pick at the end of this journey? I do a bit. I see the good and the bad of it, in that, the Bengals rode with one guy, Marvin Lewis, for far too long, I would argue, a guy who got them close but never to where they wanted to be. He gave people a lot of hope, but it was always torn away, usually by the Pittsburgh Steelers. But then when they transitioned, they got a younger guy, Zach Taylor, who wasn't good in his first year, and they still let it play out, and gradually he got them to the Super Bowl, I think, in year three. So it gives me a little bit of cause for hope, maybe. Although it brings me back again, and I will keep banging this drum, to maybe was Pellegrino let loose too early?
Yeah, as a Cleveland Browns supporter, it's the exact opposite. We go through coaches, like I go through Sox. We just, every couple of years, we get a new coach. You'd had zero stability from, we've had over three owners, four owners over those last 30 years, whereas you've had one owner. We've had multiple owners, multiple coaches, multiple general managers. So there's been zero stability, absolutely no stability. And so the Browns are in an interesting case now where they are somewhat stable and they're underperforming. And now there's calls to make some more changes, but they're so scarred by their past that they're not making, any changes. And so now they're kind of in this weird situation. And it's a historic franchise that was one of the best franchises back when, your grandparents were listening to this podcast somehow. And the Tigers matter kind of like that, right? That's a historic baseball team that has fallen on some hard times. Do you see parallels here?
No, I do see parallels. And the Tigers had horrible ownership for a long time. And there was a period in the late 90s where the Tigers were at risk every year of being the absolute worst team ever in Major League Baseball. And I believe we tied the record for the worst season in history. And then the Ilitch family bought the team. Mike Ilitch starts investing. We get better. We had a stretch in the mid-aughts to late aughts. We went to a couple World Series. Mike Ilitch dies. His son takes over. He's way more interested in selling parking spaces than he is putting a competitive baseball team on the field. And we're garbage again. And it's been bad managers. It's been bad administration. But I read an article about a year ago about how the Tigers are the example of how not to run a sports franchise. So, and it's the chaos, it's the unrest, and it's spending, Ted, you mentioned Marvin Lewis, great coach, but yeah, he probably overstayed his welcome in Cincinnati and he didn't quite have the answer for that club. And, the Tigers did the same thing with the general manager, Al Avila, who he held on to for like a decade, despite the fact that he was consistently worse every season. Consistency, yes, but not for consistency's sake. But what we had was a group of guys who were moving the team in the right direction. And what we have now is no direction, no philosophy. And that's what we're seeing with both your football teams and with my baseball team, is just kind of a shoulder shrug from the people in charge and results that match it.
I think that's the most disappointing thing, going back to what Ted said, is that it's getting harder and harder to support the sacking of Pellegrino at this point. The stability that he provided, whether it was the Dortmund match or just the last 100 matches, the ill-fated 1,000 days that they kept publicizing, it just seems like that was such a rash decision at this point. And I think that's what it reminds me of the Cleveland Browns, is that in Cleveland, the owner, the theory goes, listens to whoever the last person is who talks to him. And so there's a lot of power plays going on, and whoever's the last person in the room is going to be the one that is going to get his attention and is going to have the power. And so you've got a lot of backbiting, and those are all rumors. Who knows? I don't know. But it just seems like there's something weird going on in Stuttgart. I don't know how you let Pellegrino go and this is where we're at in the coaching look. I don't know how.
So you made the point. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you made the point a little bit ago that we all would have been furious if Verla would have stepped in and totally cleaned house right away. And, you know, rightfully so. But at the same time, it would have shown decisive management. And what we have instead is indecision and rumor and speculation and garbage moves, like bringing back former players in unspecified managerial roles that just stinks of bad management.
How much do you think that impacts the play on the field, though, Ted? I'm trying to take it back to what I understand, which is not much, but you're like, okay, the Cleveland Browns, or let's just go back to Stuttgart here. All right. So who cares to them? Who cares to Dan Axel's Agadu that Verrill and Sven are in this battle, right? Should that stuff in the upper management actually impact what's going on the pitch? I mean, it shouldn't, but is it?
I mean, I wonder, this stuff all at the end of the day, like they've got stuff written into their contracts for, you know, relegation clauses and, you know, different things like that. You know, if something like this goes on long enough, do I start to worry as a player, are my wages at stake? Is my position at this club at stake? Am I going to get sold off because Stuttgart needs to offload payroll, you know, towards the end of a season or anything like that? Like, I think there's an argument to be made that that lack of stability does permeate to the guys actually out there on the pitch. Yeah.
When they're going to be worrying that this is damaging their future value, that they're playing for a bad team. They're not getting good coaching. We don't have good player development. They're not getting good teammates brought in. This absolutely, and anybody who's worked at a job where you've got bad management, even if you're isolated off in a corner, that chaos filters down and you feel it and it impacts your day-to-day work. And we got to remember, this is a job for these guys and their bosses are in absolute free fall right now.
That's such a great point that there's players on this. Let's stick with the defense for a little bit that we absolutely love. Dino Mavropanos, absolutely love that guy. I'm big on Anton. We all love Endo. They had a match the other day. And I think it's exactly what you said, is these guys start looking and going, listen, I want to play for the Greek national team, or I want to, in the case of Dan Axel, this is a rebound club for me. And that's fine. No problem with that. Valdemar Anton is trying to prove that he's not as Vita Liga player, that he is, you know, first division player type of thing. Once the ship starts sinking, does Borna Sosa say, you know what? I'm ready to be sold at the winter break now. I don't need to stick this out. The matches today, as we record this, there's some Champions League matches, and Gregor Kobel didn't leave under bad terms at all, right? But he wanted to play on a more established club, so he goes to Dortmund. Timo Werner left under very bad terms. The club was getting relegated. He had issues with coaching, maybe maturity and all that stuff, and he scored what was a game-winning goal for them in their Champions League match. Those guys are looking, and they always have for Stuttgart, and there's no shame in that. What is next? But with the free fall that is happening now, they may be looking at that a little bit quicker than they had in the past.
We're a development club, right? Right now, that's what we are. And so what we want is the Gregor Kobel situations and the Sasa Kalajic, where guys come in, they give us their all, and they know that it's going to build their reputation, it's going to build their value. They're going to go play for a bigger club for more money, and we're all going to wish them well on the way out. What we don't want is the Timo Werners of the world, even though I think that's a bad example, because as he showed in Chelsea, Werner's got his own issues with just being unmanageable. But we don't want guys saying to their managers, get me the heck out of here. This place is a disaster and it's going to ruin me.
Yeah, I think it's part of the Sven sales pitch when he's out trying to sign players is, I'm going to get you guys exposure. I'm going to get you great coaching and development, and I'm going to get you a higher wage at the end of the day. And it worked really well at Dortmund. It's worked well to some extent, I think, so far here.
Boy, this was probably our most negative segment ever right now. And we're usually supposed to be a pretty positive. All it took for us was to mention the Browns and the Bengals, Ted, and this thing dive bombed.
Funny how that works.
But let's spin it a little positive then. What we have is Stuttgart still has a reputation as being a good place for young players. And that reputation's in danger right now, but it's not toast, right? All we need is for Verla and Sven to sit down, have a glass of Chianti or some Malort or whatever else Pellegrino left in his office, and sort this stuff out for the good of the club and the good of the players and the fans. And this is salvageable. And it could be that in a year we're looking back on this and going, oh man, wasn't that weird when everything got really funky? And aren't we all glad we're in a better place right now? And there is risk that we're looking back at this in a year and go, oh, remember when all the bad stuff started and that was the beginning of the downfall back into the second league? It's going to be on these guys to be professional and to do what's right by the club and not whatever nonsense political garbage it appears to us Verla's trying to pull right now. So I haven't lost faith, but we need to do the right thing.
Yeah, and I think whoever comes in as coach, if it's not Vimmer after the break, I think they're not inheriting a bare china cabinet. Like there's talent there. I mean, we've seen the defense's praise, and I legitimately believe there are four or five really talented guys back there, and there's talent all over the place. They're just really young. But this is a team that I think can stay up this year, and it's a great building platform going forward for whomever does come in.
Hey, I think we're a Gonzalo Castro type guy. And yes, I actually said that.
Oh, wow.
Away from being a really solid team. We just lack that stabilizing force. And it's not going to be Endo because he's not a vocal guy. He's a quiet lead by example dude. And that's fine. He is who he is. And we love him for it. We need somebody to be that vocal voice in the locker room, that stabilizing force to help these young guys get over the hump. And I think we'll be in really good shape.
You know, I think it's going to be, interesting to see who that guy's going to be. I think the guy's on the club right now, I think it's out of Carrizore. I think he's the guy who's going to get back in the lineup to help stabilize that defense a little bit. And he seems to be a pretty vocal leader. And so hopefully he can kind of help get the club back on track, especially since we have a huge match coming up. So what do you guys think? Let's move on to part three and predictions. All right, guys, drum roll. Oh, man, the Tech keeps getting better. So we've got Augsburg coming to Stuttgart, a Schwabian rival, if you will. 22 total matches these two have played. It's 10 wins for us, 11 wins for them, so they've got the advantage. 5-1-4 is Augsburg in their last 10. We were 1-1 against them last season. We got crushed at Augsburg. We had that dramatic 3-2 last minute Thiago Tomás goal at home in what was Hitzlsperger's last match. They had a late draw versus Leipzig. They should have won that match. They just lost to Bayern in the Pokal. They lost to Cologne before that. They've got a ton of yellow cards. They lead the league in fouls. They're in last place in the fair play table, which I don't know what that means, but I like that it's a stat in Germany. They should have won against Leipzig. They didn't, but they got the point. They're ahead of us on the table. Matt, I'll start with you. What are you thinking?
I feel like we've got a good chance. The thing that stands out to me with Augsburg is their -5 goal differential. And we're at a -7 after a 4-0 loss to Dortmund. So if we take that one game out, we're only at a -1. Could be that we don't score a lot. But I feel like Augsburg's a team ripe for the picking. And if we wanted a match to say, how does Vimmer line up? This is a really good comparison. This is a team we should be able to go toe-to-toe with and hold our own and hopefully take home a victory. So I'm picking Stuttgart to win this game.
All right. Well, I'm going to guess they've got Augsburg maybe by half a goal.
All right, Matt, you?
I'm going to call this a pick'em because I think they'd give Augsburg half a goal, but we're at home and they usually give half a goal to the home team.
The favorite in this one by half a goal is the home team, Stuttgart. So it's Stuttgart minus half a goal in this one. I'm not going to lie to you guys. I was going to take Augsburg in a big way in this one. It seems like this is always a rough match for us. You know, it's pretty even, Steven. You know, we've got 5 wins in the last 10 versus these guys. I like Ted, you said they give up a lot of goals. So maybe we can get off the schneid a little bit. I have to believe in Sven, and I have to believe in Vimmer that he's able to get these guys to understand the gravity of the moment. They're embarrassed as heck because of that Dortmund match. They're coming to play at home. I have to believe we're going to get a result in this one. I think it might be a draw because that's what we do. But you know what? If it was even, Steven, I'll take Stuttgart in this one. So it's a clean sweep then, all three of us?
Go VfB.
Look at this. The positivity is just coming to an end. Yeah.
It's dripping like a fine Chianti.
I you know what? I don't remember. Oh, you know what? I should show you guys. Now, the listeners can't see this, but I just had something show up in the mail today.
Ooh la la.
Ted, you and I are going to Texas. Matt, you have been invited not to go. And we are going to have some of this Stuttgart vodka that I'm holding up to the screen. There
is that label bedazzled, Travis?
It is bedazzled. If nobody knows what I'm talking about, Stuttgart sells their own vodka on the website. And it is bedazzled in a way that looks like my kid did it, but it's still very sharp. So, Ted, you will partake in some of this. And hopefully it'll be you know, by the time we get to Texas, it'll be a victory beverage.
There we go. Yeah. And then I won't have so much regret when I'm tasting this this vodka produced by a Swabian football club. I didn't know our financial straits were so bad as an organization that we had gotten into a little distillation side hustle.
There's got to be nothing.
They're so good that we were able to get into a distillation side hustle. It's all about framing.
There we go.
That's why Reno left. Because
I like your version better, Matt.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we're going to drink it one way or the other, either with tears in our eyes or with smiles on our faces. We'll see how it goes with this one. All right, gentlemen, thanks so much for joining me on this episode. Ted, it was awesome to have you. Matt, as usual.
That's fair.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you next time.
Good to see you guys. We'll always have Gunter Schaefer.
Go, Gunter.